In this episode, I will be speaking to Emma Howlin, who is a baby and child sleep coach based in Berkshire. Her business, Twinkle Twinkle Sleep, aims to protect the well-being of parents and their children by helping them to get a better night's sleep. Hi, Emma.
Hello. Hi.
So the first question is, what does a baby and child sleep coach do? Can you give me a little bit more information?
Sure, of course. So a baby and child sleep coach tends to come into play when a sleep-deprived parent gets to their end of their tether, really. They're kind of struggling with their little one's sleep. They don't know what to do. They might have read loads of books. They might have gone on Mumsnet, looked at loads of blogs, but actually they don't know what to do, or they just want that extra support. So that's where I come into it, or other baby, child and sleep coaches. So we're there to improve the sleep of their little ones. And it's done in lots of different ways. Me specifically, I take a holistic approach. So I look at the baby's different parts of their life, their temperament, their sleep needs, their feeding patterns, all sorts of things, their sleep environments, and come up with a sleep plan for them. So yeah, I think it's come a long way, sleep coaches, and there was, or maybe still is, a bit of a stigma attached to them sometimes in terms of it being sleep training as such. And there is an element of training because sleep is a learned skill. But it's not so much the old school cry it out methods. There are people who still do that. But generally speaking, we've moved a long way from that just leave them in a room to cry situation. So it's all about coming up with the best and more gentle approach for children.
So I know you work with people remotely, but also in person. When you're working with them in person, do you spend a lot of time with them more in the day, more in the evening? Like, do you work with them at bedtime, or do you like to, you know, see what they're like in the day and work on it from there?
So it depends on each family and when they want me to get involved. Sometimes it is daytime naps they want to look at, and sometimes it's the evening. Whatever time of the day, I do try and look at all parts of the day. So I have an app that they use where they upload the sleep, they upload when they're feeding them, how much they're feeding them, so I can get a full picture regardless of when I come. So I see a snapshot of the day, but then I get the added picture from different parts of different techniques, basically, and phone calls. But yeah, generally I can come in during the day and I can talk them through their naps and how they would approach nap time, or I can come in the evening. I don't do where I would do it for them. Some people have asked me, could you do this for me? Could you come in and sleep train my child? I don't do that because I feel like it's really important for the parent to do it, because I'm only there for a little while. I'll be there for that night. What happens the next night? And so I think it's really important that they feel empowered to do it themselves, as opposed to wanting someone else to do it for them. So I would be there, but not necessarily doing it for them.
And if you were to sum up what you offer as a business, what is everything that you offer?
I like to think I'm quite in depth, because there are sleep coaches out there that do kind of off the shelf packages. You can go online and buy a package that isn't necessarily tailored to your child. It's very bespoke what I do. It's a bespoke, tailored approach for your little one. Using gentle approaches as well. As I say, I don't go down the road of closing the door and never leaving them. I want to support children in building those skills using the parent and secure attachment. So I'd say bespoke, gentle, and hopefully empowering as well. A lot of people that I work with say they come to the end of it and they feel like they've kind of been educated in it. They know so much more about sleep and their baby sleep than they did in the first place. It's all about empowering them, because yes, I'm only there sometimes the 2 weeks of their life, and their baby is obviously there for a lot longer than that. So it's about giving them the tools and techniques to keep going with it as they go along and as their baby develops and grows.
Totally. And what made you want to become a baby and sleep coach?
My own children, really, and specifically my eldest, who he didn't sleep through until he was 4 years old. So I was very sleep deprived. I went back to work when he was a year old and was functioning, but not really thriving. And I really struggled. I struggled physically, I struggled mentally, because sleep deprivation has that effect on you. You know, you need sleep for lots and lots of reasons. And so did they. And, you know, his mood, his behavior was obviously affected by that as well. So when my youngest came along, I decided I wasn't going to do that again. I couldn't do with that many years sleep deprivation. So I got someone else involved. I got a sleep coach involved, and she really inspired me because she changed my life. I was able to sleep. They were able to sleep. I was able to do things when he napped and have, you know, time to sit down and do stuff, but also go to work feeling my best. So I was inspired to basically leave what I did what I was doing, which was talent development. So I was coaching in qualitative design research. So I still had those coaching skills, but I really wanted to make a difference and wanted to make sure that people didn't feel the way that I felt. And yeah, as I say, really, truly make a difference, because yes, I was coaching people, but it was quite technically skilled, kind of leadership management skills, as well as kind of research skills. But there's something really lovely about almost, well, yes, changing someone's life for the better. And that's, yeah, that was the reason I moved into this area, and haven't looked back since.
Have you reached out to that coach since, and do they know that you're doing this now?
They don't know that I'm doing it, but I did tell her that she had inspired me to potentially make that change. But yeah, it would be really interesting to have a conversation with her and her know that that's happened.
Have her know how much she inspired
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
So you've got two kids yourself.
Yes.
How has having children affected your perspective on parenting?
Massively, I have to say. I think I probably came into parenting quite naively. I was the first of my friends to have children, and I think I came into it thinking, oh, it's hard, but how hard can it really be? I maybe had a few kind of rose-tinted glasses, kind of view a picture of parenthood, and it probably wasn't helped by the fact that my eldest, William, he had reflux, he had a cow's milk dairy allergy. And it wasn't diagnosed till he was about 20 weeks old. So he was a very unhappy baby. So my parenting experience was this a bit of a shock, really. I was thinking, wow, this is totally different. My maternity leave was totally different from how I thought it was going to be, kind of going out for coffees with friends and, you know, snuggles on the sofa. It was just a lot of crying and kind of staying at home. So there was definitely a kind of shock factor as how hard it is. Obviously I had a slightly different take on it when my youngest came along, and he didn't have such extreme issues, but also how much you have to learn being a parent as well. I've learned so much being a parent, and the fact that I think I thought there was maybe a blanket approach to parenting, that you parented this one way, you know, the way you were brought up or whatever it might be, and actually there are so many different ways to parent. And yet no one size fits all. Just with the sleep, there's no one size fits all to behaviour. And I've done a lot of research into it, because each child and each of my children and every child out there needs to be parented in a different way. And I think you have to adapt and you have to learn to adapt as a parent. And yes, maybe the way you brought up might be slightly different to how you need to bring up your children as well. So yes, massive learning curve for me.
Do you ever get people who contact you before they've had the baby? If they've used you before and they're having a second child, do they ever contact you before they've even had the baby and think, look, you're going to have to help?
Yes, I have had that before, when they were pregnant and thinking about the future, because they want to stop those issues kind of in their tracks in a way. And I do offer a sleep shaping program for newborns, whereby I just lay the foundations to good sleep. You can't kind of really introduce a routine or anything until a lot later, but you can definitely lay the foundations, the right sleep environment, making sure that there's a dark enough room, that they use white noise, all these kind of things, but also thinking about feeding patterns and kind of, as I say, kind of introducing good habits to go by, so that they're not maybe running into the obstacles that they ran into with the first child that we worked together on.
And why is it important for people to work on their baby's sleep habits? Can bad sleep habits affect them as they grow up?
Definitely, yeah. But not just as they grow up, even as a baby as well. And you see the effect that sleep deprivation has on them as a baby as well, in terms of their mood and their behaviour. I was working with someone just recently with a 15-month-old, and she said he was so much happier having got the sleep that he needed. He was waking up every 40 minutes, and then he was sleeping solidly through the night at the end of this process. She said it's like having a different child. And I think we do sometimes underestimate the importance of sleep, not just for ourselves, but also on our children. And sometimes there's a guilt factor I have with parents I work with, will go, I feel really guilty because I really want a good night's sleep. But it's so important that their baby's getting that sleep and their child's getting that sleep for, as I say, for their behaviour, but for their immunity, for their development. All they're going through so much, they're growing so much in those early years. Even things like blood pressure, there's an increased risk of obesity for children as well when they don't get enough sleep. And then you think about when they go to school, the learning and academic success is heightened with more sleep as well. They're able to concentrate more. So, sleep is so important. We tend to think of it as an off switch, particularly for our children. They finally go, asleep. But actually, it's an on switch. There's so much happening in their body, regenerating, repairing when they're asleep. So it's important from the minute they're born to the very end.
What is the recommended amount of sleep that a newborn and then maybe a toddler and then a younger child should have?
So it varies. And you do have children that have different sleep needs. And it does change quite significantly over even the first year. So it starts with about 14 to 16 hours of day when they're newborn. So they're mostly sleeping. But unfortunately, it's usually during the day as opposed to the night because their body clock's all out of whack. And then it starts to slowly decrease. But it's not massive jumps in it. For example, a 9-month-old might need kind of 13 and a half hours or 14 hours. So it slowly goes down. And then you get to kind of a 2-year-old who needs 11, 12 hours sleep a day. And then teenagers, they still need a lot as well. There's a lot going on with teenagers. They still need a lot of sleep. So I have a chart that I send out that says, look, keep an eye on those sleep needs, because you might think your 7-year-old doesn't need 10 and a half, 11 hours sleep, but really he does. Think about all that learning that he's doing at school, all of the activities that he's doing. And there is something called overtiredness, where children can go past, and us as adults can go past the point of tired. And then they're overtired. It's much harder for them to settle down to sleep. So there's a misconception that I better keep my baby awake all day, or my child awake all day, and run them ragged, and then they'll sleep better at night. But actually, it does the complete opposite. And what you need to do is top up their sleep so they sleep better at night. So if your child isn't going to sleep and they're refusing to go to sleep, it might just be that they're so tired that they have cortisol, the stress hormone, in them, and they can't physically wind down to go to sleep. So it's really worth keeping on top of their sleep needs as they grow and develop.
And how important, because obviously your work also helps the parents to sleep, because people say, oh, I'll sleep when the baby sleeps, but you can't, because when the baby sleeps you're
exactly
washing the baby's clothes and you're doing everything. How important is parent sleep as well?
Massively, yeah. That's the reason why I got into this, because I think sleep coach isn't about sleep coaching the babies. It's about coaching the parents who are really struggling. And I work with people who have postnatal depression and anxiety because of the effect of sleep deprivation. You see it, you're much more emotional when you're tired. Your eating habits change. There are so many ways. I've worked with people who have fallen asleep at the wheel of their car because they are so tired. It is important for safety reasons. And also, a lot of people I work with is when they're going back to work, particularly women who have maybe 9, 10, 11 months off at work, and they're about to go back and they're thinking, how am I going to function at work properly? I've been okay at home. It's hard enough at home when I've just got to get through the day with the baby, which is very hard in itself when you're tired. But how am I going to go to work and do my job? Potentially, if you're a doctor even, or a teacher, and you're on your feet all day, sometimes high risk jobs as well, but even the lower risk ones, you want to thrive in your job. So it's super, super important. And I do go into businesses sometimes to talk about the importance of adult sleep as well, and prioritizing that.
And you say there's no one size fits all with your sessions. How do you tailor them to suit the different clients?
So I do really in-depth analysis on the baby and their family and where they're sleeping. I think it's really important that it's not just a kind of blanket approach to it, because every child is different. And one of the main things I look at is the temperament of the child, because every child will react differently to a specific technique that you give them to improve their sleep, you give the parent to improve their sleep. So let's say they're a really alert, animated type. Having a parent directly sat next to them, trying to support them in going to sleep, can be really stimulating and actually be detrimental. They're not able to go to sleep because their parent has sat right next to them. But likewise, a more easygoing type baby might really need that support in the room, and it's fine that their parent's there. That's not distracting them. They're able to wind down and settle down more. So I really look into their temperament, their personality, to kind of tell me what technique might improve their sleep skills. But then I also look at, as I say, a holistic approach to what they're eating, when they're eating it, their sleep environment, so optimizing their bedroom to make sure it's set up for sleep, so darkness and quietness and the temperature and all sorts of different things we look at, and also their routine, because that is massive in it as well. And as I say, with their sleep needs changing, you need to tweak the routine as they get older as well. So, and it's, that's the thing with parenting. You might think you've figured it out and you're, yes, I've got three naps, that's fine, we're on a really good routine. And then suddenly, curveball, now they need to drop down to two naps because their sleep needs change. So it's all about finding the right routine for them, so they're not, as I talked about earlier, they're not overtired before they go to bed, but they're not undertired as well. It sounds very complicated, and I guess it is to some extent, but I really hope that in working with these parents and as I say, educating them, that they have the tools to then adapt it as their child does grow.
And then before you know it, they're hiding their phones under their pillows at night.
Exactly. It's always a new challenge that will come. Yeah.
What are the few of the biggest factors that can affect a baby or a child's sleep?
So I would say there's probably three key factors that come into play that I look at and mainly kind of contend with in my role. So the first one is sleep onset associations. So sleep onset associations are the way in which a baby falls asleep or a child falls asleep. So something they associate with helping them go to sleep. So for little babies, it might be something like milk, or it might be rocking. For older babies or children, it might be sat there holding their hand. That's their sleep onset association. So these things, if they're using them to go to sleep in the first place, are what they need in the middle of the night in order to go back to sleep again, because none of us sleep through the night. All of us go through our sleep cycles and we go into our lighter stages of sleep. And us as adults and those who can sleep through the night are able to put ourselves back to sleep. So we can go into that lighter sleep and maybe shuffle our pillow around and then go back to sleep again. But for babies and children who have had that help going to sleep in the first place, they can't do it themselves. They require the same help again to go back to sleep. So that's where I come in giving them the techniques to teach them how to go to sleep themselves and do it independently. So number one, sleep onset associations. Number two, as I say, inappropriate routines come into play. So making sure it's the right routine can really help optimize sleep. So making sure they're going to sleep at the right times, getting the right amount of daytime sleep, the right amount of nighttime sleep to make sure they're not overtired. And yeah, thirdly, the temperament, because that very much affects how much sleep they need, but also how they react to being put to sleep as well. So the more alert, animated types would take a bit more winding down time, for example, because they are quite wired before they go to bed. The easygoing types are more likely to kind of give in to sleep and go to sleep more easily.
Amazing. And what are your top tips for building a successful bedtime routine?
I love a bedtime routine. I've implemented bedtime routines for my little ones since they're about 2 weeks old. You can do it from that early on. Obviously, it's not as kind of in depth and not as long as it is when they're older, but it's something you can definitely do quite early on. I would say my favourite steps would be to put the house into bedtime mode. This is something I always recommend with my clients, that they kind of close the curtains, they put the lamp on, they keep everything calm, play really calms down. And so there's a nice transition from the daytime energy and excitement to bedtime. So everyone's winding down, turn off the screens, because we as adults know how looking at our phones or watching TV before bed can really interfere with the melatonin production and being able to wind down to sleep. So turning off all screens and just winding everything down. Then having a bath, so them having their bath, it can be really nice and calming, but also it's artificially heightens their body temperature, because when they sleep, you want it to drop. So it artificially heightens it, they drop, they can go better to sleep. Taking them into their room, which should be nice and dark, using lamp light only at this point, putting them in their pajamas. Some people like to introduce a massage, particularly for the littler ones, can be really nice and relaxing. And then giving them a feed if they're at that stage. Obviously, if they're older, they're not having that, but the feed, so breastfeed or a bottle. And then I always recommend, particularly as they get older as well, in terms of kind of 4, 5, 6 months old, you introduce a story between the feed and the bedtime, putting them in the cot, because this really separates the feeding from sleep, because that is the biggest sleep onset association that occurs, where the baby is feeding to sleep and then wakes up and needs a feed in order to go back to sleep again. So if you put a step in between that, whether or not it's a story or a song, something else where they're not falling asleep on the bottle or the breast, then you're able to slowly kind of disconnect those two things and help them sleep better in the long run.
Oh, wow. That's really cool to hear the science behind bath, bottle and bed, because that's what I've always been told. So it actually works. There's reasons.
There are reasons, exactly.
That's so cool. And what are your thoughts on co-sleeping?
So I always say whatever works, works. Obviously, there are safety guidelines for co-sleeping, and always I would recommend that you follow the safe sleeping guidelines. But, you know, if co-sleeping is something that works for you and your family, and you're following those safety guidelines, there's absolutely no harm in it. Usually I get involved where people are saying, I just can't do it anymore. They might be getting the sleep, the little one might be getting the sleep, but I'm not, or none of us are getting the sleep that we need, and therefore we want to move away from that, in which case I'd be saying, okay, these are the steps that we need to take in order to move away from that. But there's no way I would go in and say, this is wrong, because as I say, whatever works, works. If that's a dummy and it's working and it's not disrupting their sleep, absolutely fine. But it's when it's not working is where I get involved.
And do you have a maximum age that you work with?
I tend to say up to 7, but really there are certain behaviour, it becomes more of a behavioural issue as they get older, and it's all about kind of daytime, setting up the daytime and what's going on in the daytime. Have they got anxieties that you need to talk to them about? Because as I say, with the littler ones, it tends to be a bit more straightforward in terms of what the issues are, overtiredness, their sleep needs not being correct, all of those things. But when they get, as they get older, it's a bit more complex. So above 7, I'd say, is the age where I'd want to be getting someone, a behavioural expert involved, which is something I really want to get into in the future, because it is more behavioural than learning the sleep skills as such, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So thinking about sort of co-sleeping, so sleeping in the bed as opposed to sleeping in a cot, I noticed the one difference that I think about is having a pillow. At what age do you introduce a pillow? And is it just because society says have a pillow, or does it actually have a function?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one, because, well, we say it's not before the age of 1 should they have a pillow. It's a safety issue again. You need a clear cot and making sure that there's no suffocation issues around such as comforters and things and bed bumpers. But yeah, the pillow thing is, it's kind of society thing. If this is comfortable, but it's not necessarily what's right for your body as well, if you think about the way that your neck's positioned when you have a pillow. So I would always recommend, if they want a pillow, if they want to introduce a pillow, or the child loves a pillow, it might be a way of them liking the bed. They know that mummy and daddy have a pillow, for example, or their brother or sister has a pillow, and they want to feel older, that you have, you can get toddler pillows that are really, really slim. So they're not proper big pillows. It's a very slim pillow that they can use as a kind of introduction to it, because the proper big size pillows can be quite large for them as their bodies and the cot itself.
Oh, that's really cool. Do you have any advice or recommendations for parents who are trying to make their child look forward to bedtime, or they're moving into their own room and they need to be excited about it? Do you have any tips for associating it with something positive?
Sure. There's lots of things that you could read, books about bedtime. There's loads of books you can find online that are about bedtime and making it exciting and why we go to sleep. And I like to talk to my own children about why we go to sleep and how important it is to go to sleep, so we have the energy for our next day of fun. And so really setting up why we sleep is really important. You can also get them involved in the choice of their bed. If you're moving to a new bedroom or a new bed, new bedding, pajamas. Choices for children is really important. So if they feel like they're involved in that process, they get more excited by it as well. And even down to during the bedtime routine, as they get older, giving them a choice of pajamas and a choice of books gets them more involved and feel like they have control. Because if you think about yourself as a child, sometimes you feel like you have zero control over your life. So if you feel like you have control over certain parts, like choice of pajamas, that can be quite nice. Get them involved in that choice of bedding. The bed, maybe even down to kind of slight choices about what cup they want to have for their water and things like that can get them excited as well.
Amazing, cool. And you offer free discovery calls for anyone who is interested. What is the process of one of these calls? What do you talk about? So someone who might be listening knows what to expect.
Sure. So discovery calls are all about me understanding their sleep challenges, their specific sleep challenge, and for me to kind of work out if and how I could help them. So as I say, it is free, and it's totally there just to kind of get to know each other as well. Because as I talked about, sleep coaching is about building that trust with the people that I work with, the clients I work with, because there has to be that level of trust. It's their little one is so precious, and we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing for them. So it's all about working out if we could work together and how well we could work together, but also if I can help them with their sleep challenges. So usually what I do is ask them what the trigger has been to call me. So what triggered it? Because usually I get these booked in at 4 a.m. in the morning or something. You know, what happened at that 4 a.m. where you went, I've had enough, I need to talk to someone about this. And we go through that. Then I get them to talk me through their routine, the little one's routine. So I can really kind of pull apart what might be going on. And also their child, a little bit more about their child and their personality, so I can get a bit of an idea of their temperament. And then we talk about what their goals would be. What would they like? Some people are just saying, I want to move them into their own room for the night. I don't care if they wake up several times a night, but I just want them out of my bed. Some people are saying, I want a full night's sleep. I want them to sleep at 7 and sleep through till 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. Lots of people have different goals. So we talk through what they would be. And then I would say, this is how I could help you. So I talk them through my packages. And then we work out whether or not it's something they want to go ahead with. And sometimes people need to go away and chat to their husbands or other halves about it. And sometimes I go, I need you now. Let's book it in ASAP. And then we go ahead. And I try to be quite responsive because I know it's in the moment kind of, I want to work ASAP on the sleep. I'm really tired. So we try and get in as soon as possible if I can.
Cool. And how else can people find you on social media, for example?
So I've got a website, which is www.twinkletwinklesleep.co.uk. And also on Instagram as twinkletwinkle_sleepcoach. So yeah, both those platforms are ways of contacting me.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Emma. If you're interested in Twinkle Twinkle Sleep and want to get in touch with Emma, as she said, you can head over to her website, twinkletwinklesleep.co.uk, and book a free discovery call. Thanks very much.
Thank you.